Okay, so this is lesson six. We are doing the last half of chapter six after we've gotten over the hump of the first half of chapter six. I know that last week's lesson was really difficult, and I know that it's still one of those hard to grab hold of. I think this week's lesson will give us a little more claws into it. And truthfully, I think it was difficult because it is such a paradigm shift of what we are, of what we live, of what we've been taught, of how we think it is to live in the kingdom. I think living under grace all the time is so foreign to us that it's very difficult for us to even to get any flesh out of that. So that kind of feeds into what we're going to talk about today, because it was never intended for you to grasp and go, oh yeah, I want grace. Here's grace. Got it. I'm good. It's a process. And so it's not only a process of actually living it, it's a process of even understanding it. So they kind of go hand in hand. We know that in processes, we begin to learn and we begin to change slowly. And we don't understand always what's going on at the very beginning or even in the middle of a process. So what we're going to talk about first, before we even get to the verses in Hebrews 6, is process versus solution. In other words, we are a culture, we are a people who really like solutions to problems, rather than having to go through a process. So really, what's the difference? A process, by definition, is a series of action made in order to change or preserve something. Whereas a solution is an answer implemented to solve a problem. So it becomes a very, you've got a problem, here's the solution, just do it. Which is most of our desires, right? I don't like this, here's a way to fix it, here's the end.
That's our medical
Definitely our medical community. It's actually the way we live pretty much all the time. Whereas a process doesn't even say there's a problem. It just says, let's have some change. And let's start going through that. And within the process, the changes become little by little by little. So we have process versus solution. And so I'm going to step you through an episode of What Not to Wear as a process. Because that is definitely a process as opposed to a solution. And literally, I've never watched this show, but I looked up to make sure it's what I thought it was. There's a show, I think it used to be, on called Nip and Tuck?
Yeah,
Nip Tuck. I mean, as soon as I heard the name, I thought, okay, yeah, this is a solution one. The funny thing is that I didn't know this when I looked it up. It's actually based 100% on real cases.
Really?
Yeah. So every case that they show you is real. So I'll tell you what Nip and Tuck is first, and then we'll go through What Not to Wear. So Nip and Tuck is basically a show about people who don't like some part of their body, and they go to a doctor and say, I don't like this part of my body, and he says, great, give me some money, I'll take it off, and you're done. So it's plastic surgeon. So that's what Nip and Tuck is about. And it's literally cases of people who don't like what they see on their body. They give them lots of money to fix the problem, and the problem is solved, right? They have an answer to the problem. That's a solution. So that's kind of the antithesis of process. So we're going to look at process through What Not to Wear because it is so parallel to the lesson today. It's like
uncanny. They also had that swan for a while.
They have what?
They had a black swan with real people where they had a plastic surgeon come and highlight all the things that were wrong with them.
Right. Right. So do you understand process versus solution?
Yep.
Where we're going with that? Okay. So I tried to actually find pictures of at least What Not to Wear so that I could put them up here. And they really don't have pictures of the process. They have pictures of the stars. They have pictures of, you know, some of the end makeovers. But I would have to watch a video again. So I just drew really quickly this morning. Process versus solution. Okay, so here's process. And this is what not to wear. And this is solution, nip and tuck. So, person is does not like how she looks. She's a pear. And, oh, she doesn't even have any hair. That's pretty sad. She's sad. She gives money. She gets cut. And it's solved, right? We don't have an end of is she happy or not yet here. But that's a solution. And I want you to look at that in terms of what we've been talking about. What would you call that? Yeah, it's a transaction, right? Mm-hmm. I don't like this. I pay. And I get what I like, right? Okay, so that solution. Process looks like this in What Not to Wear. So the very first thing, is there anybody here who has never seen an episode? Okay, so three people. All right, so the very first, and help me along if I'm misrepresented, but the very first thing that happens is they get surprised by these two hosts. So they're in their normal everyday, either workplace or out with friends, and two hosts with cameras behind them come and surprise them and say, and usually, almost, I would say 95%, as soon as the people see these hosts, they know what's going on. Because friends have nominated them. Yeah. Friends have said, this person needs help with their wardrobe because it's not showing who they really are. So these hosts come and they surprise them and they say, hey, I'm Stacy, I'm Clinton. And we're from what TLC is What Not to Wear. And they say, we have a gift for you. We have a credit card with your name on it with $5,000 on it. It's yours, completely yours. Do you want it? So it's an invitation to them to for $5,000 worth of clothes. But they say, basically, but you have to submit to our process. So you get the $5,000. But you actually have to give up control of the process, which is what happens in a process, right? Mm-hmm. Is that you actually give up control. So they say, so now do you still want the $5,000? And most of the people right away say, of course. There are a lot of people that, first of all, are embarrassed or shaken, or they actually stand there and think through, do I want to go through the process? Mm-hmm. And they tell them what the process is. Process is you have to bring all of your clothes, pack up all the clothes that you have, bring them to New York, and we will go through them with you and help you get rid of the things that aren't showing who you are. So that's the process. Are you willing to do that? But you have to go along with our process. Basically, you don't get a say in it. You don't get to negotiate whether you keep this or you don't. So, I have never seen anyone say no.
I think if they do, they show. That's what I'm thinking too.
I wonder. Yeah. I wonder.
They've had people that went in the process, they're still not buying it.
Right.
And at the end.
Yeah. There are a few of those. Mm-hmm. So we have, here we have, first of all, an invitation to a gift, right? That's a gift not just of money to buy clothes, because we could do a solution with that, right? We could say, you don't like how you look? Fine, I will not just give you money. I'll go and buy your clothes, and here they are, right? That's a solution, but that's not what they do, because their motive is not to make them look better at the end. It's not where they're going. And the reason I can tell you that with absolute surety is what happens to the people and how grateful the people are at the end and how changed. They have had episodes where they've gone back a year later to see what's different with the people, which confirms that. So, first thing is there was an invitation to a gift. So, then they say...
Well, and the gift is not like your way.
Like, right, exactly. It's the gift is... We want to change you. We want to give you life that you are hiding. We want to give that to you. So this is a gift. But we need your cooperation. And the cooperation is you have to bring all of your clothes with you and be willing to let us sort through those clothes. So they take all their clothes out of their closet and they pack them up and bring them to them, and they put them on hangers, and they start going through their clothes and showing them, you know, why, and asking them, why do you have this? Why do you have this? You have 40 t-shirts. Do you need 40 t-shirts? And they'll, you know, go through them all. And rarely is anything left on the rack. Sometimes. Every once in a while, there'll be one or two things left on the rack. But pretty much, and they put them into a big garbage can. And yes, they do it kind of, I can't believe you wear this. Are you a hooker? Are you, you know, and really going through, you know, why would you wear this? All pretty honest, all pretty accurate of things. Sometimes they throw away things that I don't think they need to, but pretty much. But the cooperation is, and there are some people that argue. No, I want that, I want that. Why do you want that? It reminds me of this, or it makes me feel good, are almost always the comments. But basically, sometimes they'll have to remind them, you said you would cooperate with us. Okay. So, invitation, cooperation, and then they get them into what they call the 360 mirror. So I Googled 360 mirror pictures. I came up with a list of websites of where you can buy 360 mirrors. Oh my God. All sorts of people want to know where you can buy a 360 mirror. Funny. Which is kind of weird. A 360
they don't
mirror.
Lie.
What?
They don't lie.
No, they don't. So.
Yes, they do.
So a 360 mirror is literally a room that is, I think, octagonal in shape, and it's all mirrors. So it's not
like
much. Yeah, it's about as big as this table, and the people actually go in there. Obviously, there's a hole in one of the mirrors that has a camera because we get to see it on tape. It has a glass door in the back. So they go into the 360 degree mirror. And here's where you begin to understand that although for show value, you know, kind of shock value, both Stacey and Clinton are saying, you know, goofy things about what they're wearing. So they have to put on three outfits from that rack and explain to them why they wear that. Stacey and Clinton will say, I can't believe it. But what they do within that 360 mirror is they say, look, you are a beautiful woman. And it does not matter the size of, they've had obese people, they have had, I was going to say misshapen, that's not very nice. They have differently shaped women. I mean, they have everybody in there, and they always say, you are a beautiful woman, and you are trying to hide the beauty that is in you. So this is how they are going at, this is the underneath line, underlying, they want them to see that they don't have to hide behind clothes. They don't have to hide behind hair or lack of makeup or makeup or whatever. And there are the gamut. Some people wear all this makeup. Some people wear nothing. They don't want to be seen. I think this week or the last week, there was a woman who had long, long hair. And the hairdresser asked her, what's your reason for growing your hair long? And you know what she said? I'm trying to hide my bosom. Oh, wow. I don't like my bosom. And so she had long hair. And then she started crying, of course, because this is what happens with the show. It brings out then underlying things that are happening. So the 360 mirror is, you are beautiful and you're hiding it. And we want to help you see that you can dress so that your beauty comes out. You can dress so that who you are actually comes out. And I'm trying to think of examples of who you are. Not just beauty. They're not talking so much about outward beauty, but who you are inside. So a lot of times, particularly when you have women who dress very flashy, usually there's some insecurity that they're trying to get to. There's some, like, you're trying to get attention with your clothes instead of who you are. You're trying to hide by being flashy, as well as on the other end, you're trying to hide by wearing men's clothes. A lot of women wear men's clothes that don't fit, trying to hide. So that's kind of their premise. You're beautiful. You don't need to hide it. You want people to be able to see who you are. And yes, they do, in the taping of it, focus on specifically, like, you are a salesperson. Do you think people want to buy from you? Or you're an art designer. And they were dressing goth, I think. Do you think people want to come and say, oh, this 23-year-old knows what she's doing? So it kind of says, whether you like it or not, what you wear does say something about you.
They also point out that oftentimes what a person thinks they're reflecting, they point out that
it's doing the opposite.
Think that looks comfortable, you look like a slob.
Right.
And so
right.
They give an outside
right.
picture.
Right. Right. Or you think this looks they do a lot of, you think this looks sexy, you look like a hooker.
Yeah.
I mean, they're saying showing skin is not sexy. So they talk about that as well. So the idea of the 360 mirror is really, I want to give you some confidence. We want to show you, look, you are beautiful, and we want to bring it out in you. And they do it in a way that is tough. The 360 mirror is the one place where you often see tears. Because they're pointing out, you're dressing like this. This is not who you are. It's an absolutely honest look. And yes, we have, you know, television value is going to, you know, make them a little snarky. But I mean, if you watch things like American Idol, it's not like that where they're really, what's the guy's name?
Simon.
It's not like that. And you'll see at the end of the show, every person that walks out there loves these hosts. At the end of the show, they're like their best friends. So you know underneath all this, things are going on that are not snarky.
Well, I think, though, that, like, you can use the avenue they use is clothes, but
right.
which we can argue and obviously has valid points. But it's just the avenue.
Right.
What they're just trying to get
right.
provoked, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's a good thing. They are trying to provoke, but the clothes is the avenue, and because it's visual, it really shows well for TV.
Well,
but
it's also our world,
right. But it's really getting to what's going on underneath. We want to get there, and we want to be able to help in the process of getting there. So we have, they invite them, they ask them to cooperate, they're trying to give them confidence. But they're actually, what word would we use? Yeah. So, and we've used deconstruction. That's what they're doing. Is they're deconstructing what's happening. And then they say, now you have 2 days, and you are to go to, we're going to give you stores to go to. We want you to go to the stores, and we want you to be completely vulnerable. Let a camera go with you, and you are going to try on thousands of pieces of clothes to buy. To go, and they've given them some guidelines of, you know, this will help you show this, this will help you show this. They go there, and they first make them go alone. But are they really alone? No, because Stacey and Clinton are watching in the back room. You know, they have there's a camera, and they're watching them. And of course, they're making comments, you know, she still thinks she's ugly. I cannot believe it. She has no confidence. Or, you know, she thinks she's going to not do what we've asked her to do. But almost always, the people are like, I can't do this on my own. I don't know how to do this. It's hard. And so then Stacey and Clinton kind of swoop in, and they say, we're going to help you. We'll do it. And so they talk them through, let's try this. Let's try this. You got to try a lot of things. It's a process, going this and this and this. And they start to begin to talk about other things with them, but they go with them into the dressing room, and then they say, you know, go behind the curtain, try this on, come out. okay, this is why this doesn't look good, this is why this does look good, this and this combined, this. So they give them all sorts of feedback, but they have to come out, and sometimes they come out and you go, oh, no, no, not that, not that. I mean, it's a very vulnerable, it's much more vulnerable than the 360 mirror, because it's coming out over and over and over again. I mean, think about this. How would you like cameramen and two professionals who are, you know, very well dressed, as you can imagine, and you're coming out in your, you know, all of your imperfections, you're coming out over and over and over again. There's this vulnerability that they're asking them to, but in the midst of their vulnerability, they're saying, we're here with you, and we're gonna walk this through with you over and over. So we have this, I don't know what to call this, vulnerable with help. I don't know. So that's basically the process. The end result is they have to now come back to the studio and model for them what has happened. Well, in between that, they do hair and makeup. So they do the same thing with hair and makeup. They spend an entire week there. They only show you 4 days. But you know those 3 days in between, there has been a lot of helping, counseling, coming alongside. And the reason you know this is because when they come out, they get a chance to look at what they look like, and they always look amazing. But the people say, without prompting, I cannot believe how different I feel inside. I cannot believe I'm a different person than I was a week ago. And they talk about the process of being torn down and built up, and how they've changed on the inside, and how the clothes are only this outward sense of what's happened on the inside. And almost to a person, they come and say things like that. And then they either, I mean, they always, oh, can I please hug you, because you have done so much for me, to these people who at the beginning they might have wanted to strangle. So what you see is a process that changes the inside of them. You still get on the outside this great solution, but it was done through a process. So does that make sense? You know where we're going there?
Yep. You never really went through that. You know, did you really ever subject yourself, or did you just, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's powerful about the process that God invites us to is he went through it first.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, he went through it and invites us into something.
And he knows exactly.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Every once in a while on this show, one of the hosts will say, you know how I grew up? I haven't really heard it much from Stacy, a little bit, but from Clinton, he said, I was that scrawny, weird kid that, you know, everyone thought was like, had no weight on him. And so he will say that too. But unfortunately, he's the man, and it's, they've done away with doing it for men. So, yeah, right. So that's the picture. And I think it's a really good picture of what we're going to do here. So let me go just line by line, process versus solution. And then we'll look finally at Hebrews 6. So process, first of all, requires surrender of control. You got to let go in a process, because a process is just not a action thing. A process is a let's go through lots of different things. There's waiting. There's just you just don't have control in a process. Whereas a solution requires a specific action. Just do this. Pay, cut, done. Process. Experience is the top priority, that they experience it. It's not a show that they get $5,000, they get to go to the store, buy the clothes, and be done. The idea is the process that brings change. For a solution, the outcome, a specific outcome, is the top priority. In a process, efficacy is valued. In other words, was it effective? Is there change happening? That's what is valued in a process. Efficiency is valued in a solution. Do we have an answer yet? And it's always the quicker the better.
There's that word again.
Which word?
Efficiency.
Efficiency, yeah. You know, and I will tell you, sometimes I have a hard time even writing that because literally I remember thinking specifically, well, of course we're supposed to do things efficient. God is efficient. And I thought, well, I'm going to look and see. And, you know, it only took me about, you know, looking up two verses and realizing God's not efficient at all. Because he's a process God. He's not a solution God.
Not to mention that I think sometimes we sell it as a solution.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's why Hebrews is so adamant about understanding that grace is a process.
It's funny, though, like even to us, a process is a solution.
Yeah, if you just go through this process, you'll get
right.
This.
We don't understand that it doesn't always follow that model either.
Well, and not just the model. Notice I don't put an end to either of those. Because in a process, not only do you give up control of the whole time going, you give up control of what it'll look like at the end. Because literally, I mean, as much as we've watched this, so one of the last ones was, I think an Asian woman who had kind of punk hair. Yeah, and so she gets to the hairdresser, and I'm going, oh, good, they're going to get her hair back to nice and black. It's going to be beautiful. And he goes, we're going to go even pinker. And he gives her bright pink hair. And you think, what? No. She's supposed to look this way. So you have to completely give up even the outcome here in a process, what it looks like. So in a process, exposure is very likely. In other words, in a process, you're going to find the underneath stuff that's causing problems. You're going to find roots of things, which is what happens a lot. You find things that have happened to them that they've held on to that have caused them to hide or caused them to be flashy or whatever. But exposure is very likely in a process. Because it's taking time and because you're not trying to just get an end result, you're trying to get lasting change. So exposure is very likely. In a solution, you know, there's very little need for full revelation. I just want an end product. And here, this I don't know, I've never watched the show Nip and Tuck, but my guess is what you found is these people who are sad because of what they look like, they do a transaction, they get it cut off, they come out at the end, they look like the picture they thought they were going to look like, but they're not happy. From everything I've ever read about that.
So they need more somewhere.
They still need more, right. Oh, that's great, but what about this? Right. What about this? Mm-hmm. So, but they got the solution. They're done. But there wasn't any real full revelation of why do you feel you're not beautiful? Why do you feel... that you're not reflecting good. So, in a process, you need to have trust. There has to be some level of trust to begin with. And the cool thing about a process is you begin with a little trust, but within the process, trust begins to build. So, with these people at What Not to Wear, a lot of them go in with a skepticism. Okay, I'm going to trust you this far. And some of them even say, I'll go this far, and then we'll see. And almost always you end up at the end, they're like, I could trust you completely. Sometimes you wonder if these hosts could tell them, you know, now you really, you need to have one leg cut off and you look better. I mean, that's how much at the end these people are trusting of them. So what you've seen in the process is that not only was trust given at the beginning, just a little, but trust was built.
But she was gone for a month because she didn't want anyone to know she had a facelift.
Wow. Yeah, that's exactly it. There is no vulnerability in a solution because I'm just getting it. I'm just transacting. I'm just changing one thing for another.
My neighbors would always get visited.
because people come because it's really inexpensive in the Middle East to get plastic surgery. So people would come
So
from the States
scary.
and stay with them and for like a month
There's no
and
anesthesia.
while they get plastic surgery. Probably.
Yeah, they would so they would come back and be
Right.
completely done.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's funny.
Lisa said
Yeah,
when she was first in Syria, she'd walk around, she would say, "Man, a lot of people sure get their noses broken often here," because she saw so many people with their noses bandaged, right?
Yeah, I live next door to a hospital.
Ah.
Crazy. And it was until I started seeing men with their noses bandaged too, that I was like
Yeah, epidemic of, yeah, that's kind of a norm there.
Yeah,
I saw a show that said that a lot of women in the Middle East get a lot of plastic surgery on their eyes and nose if they have to be covered because
Right.
it's the only part of them that shows.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Well, and they have yeah. Larger noses in that region.
Yeah,
Oh.
yeah.
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 So, trust is needed in the process. Attitude is really superfluous. I can bet you that in nip and tuck, and I can bet you, you know, I would say probably the majority of plastic surgeons, correct me if I'm wrong, probably never say, "So why do you feel you're, you know, why do you feel you're not beautiful? Why do you feel you need that?" I don't know, but my
I think
guess is,
they're probably like, "Yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
you're right, yeah, you know, $5,000 here, yeah."
Yeah.
And why did you do this too?
And in a transaction, you don't really even touch on attitude. Whereas that becomes a big issue in a process. So attitude is revealed and then begins to change as well. The goal in a process is growth. So it's not a specific outcome. Whereas in the solution, a specific, already chosen outcome, what you've chosen at the beginning, is what your goal is. This is what you need to look like. This is what we're going to go toward. At the beginning of a process, it's not, "We need you to look this way." It's, "We need you to grow into your beauty," whatever that might be. And the result, of course, in a process is transformation, change from the inside. Change in form or nature or character is usually the definition of transformation. The results in a solution is conformity, conformation. And the interesting definition of that is to comply or act in accordance with the prevailing standards. That's conformation. And so we go back to that verse. Be not conformed to this world, but transformed by the renewing of your mind. This is why we talk about grace as a process, because grace is not how we live. We live transactionally, and God says, "I'm going to give you grace that will begin to transform your thinking, your mind, so that you begin to live as who I made you to be."
Well, and you think about all of Jesus' interactions of healing, right? And how so many times it was merely to reflect what he was doing
Yes.
inside.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. So the goal of grace is to learn to live in eternity. So there isn't a solution. Grace is not a solution. Grace is a process to help you to learn to live in eternity. And so I asked you your favorite winter sport that you had to learn. You knew that it took time to learn, right? And in the time, you learned all sorts of ways to move your body, how to wear your clothes. It wasn't a, "Oh, you want to ski? Go ski." It was, you learned all sorts of things. You learned a lot about gravity. You learned all sorts of things that perhaps now that you know how to ski or you know how to skate or you know how to climb ice waterfalls, you take for granted. And yet it was a process to get you there. And it wasn't just steps, because solutions can be steps. It wasn't just steps, but within those actions of the processes, there's actually change in your body and understanding. Does that make sense? This is what grace is. And I do think it's why we have a difficult time with with grasping what it's like to live in grace. Because we have often, I have often even used God's word to say, oh, here's a solution, mm-hmm. which is really law.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny how there's, okay, there's no prayer, right?
Right.
There's really no prayer that we're supposed to pray.
Right.
Like, that causes the solution or transformation.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, we may create one.
Right.
But Jesus didn't really give one. And I was thinking about, like, even in parenting, like, there's, like, words and wisdom, but, again, they're not like,
right.
this is what you do all the time.
Right, exactly.
In the Bible, you know?
Exactly. It is learning, and think about this, the first step of process is letting go of your control. Which again is, God just give us a solution that we can do. And so, because we are so transactional, and we've taken that in as the way to live, and then we come to God's word and his grace and Christ in the flesh, and we think, oh, here's the real solution. And he said, no, he never said, I'm the solution. He said, I'm the way. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. I'm the way. And a way is a process, mm-hmm. is a walking through. So.
I wonder if the reason why it's hard for us to switch paradigms is because in nature, even there are laws like gravity.
Yep.
So, I mean, there are certain things that if you do this, then this happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jesus comes along and says, yeah, you live in a world that is conducted kind of by laws
mm-hmm.
of nature
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants us to think beyond that in a kingdom
right.
that we really don't have control over.
Right.
I don't know.
Yes, yes.
So
and think
it's
about
not that.
That
it's wrong.
Right.
It's just that that's reality.
Right.
We do have laws.
Right.
He's inviting us into a different mindset in context of these
mm-hmm.
things that just normally happen.
Yeah. And the funny thing about the laws that we have, the laws of nature, first of all, as we discover things, they change.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they aren't always true if you leave. Law of gravity is not true in space.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we have said, though, nope, this is how it is.
No.
That's
until
right.
You,
exactly.
That's
until we have the revelation, which
right.
is grace. And so this grace is this invitation. Do you want to go through the process? Do you want the invitation to be complete? Well, and we all say, yes, yes. Oh, good, I'm complete. I'm done. And now I can go on living life. But the process of grace is a process. It's not a solution. So I want us to look at Hebrews 6. Starting with verse, well, I'll tell you that chapter 1 through 5 is really the invitation. He's basically painting this picture of, here's an invitation. And the invitation is to the grace of, the process of grace, starting with the grace of completion. So here's an invitation to be complete. It's the same thing. Here's an invitation, a gift. I want to give you this gift to be complete, to be whole. To be the beautiful person that God made you to be. There's the invitation. God's gift is that he is going to fully restore Eden and us as well. And his completion of both us and creation is going to be fulfilled and has been fulfilled, both at the same time, through Christ. Who himself submitted to the process. What Sherilyn brought up is that's a huge thing for us. He knows what the process is like. And he knows that it's a process. And that he spent his time in the process.
And the amount of time he showed us cooperation with the Father, which he didn't really have to show us.
Right,
right.
Right.
Like the times he checked in with God or spent
yep.
time with God. Like
yep.
he didn't have to do that necessarily.
Right, exactly.
But it was really just to show us what cooperation was like.
Yeah, exactly. He definitely.
I wonder if like completion is really
right.
That
right.
Has control.
Which is really where this whole passage ends up is being in this place of vulnerability. So Jesus went through the process and now he gets to direct and give us the gift of process. And that's what he's offering there. And this good news that we have this invitation to process is for me this taste of hope. And again, so many of our religious words that we get straight from the Bible, we've kind of manipulated into this is what it is. Hope, in its basic, means an expectation of receiving good. So expectancy. In other words, it's not optimism. Optimism is, I know that the political climate is going to get better and we're going to have a different president. I know that my health is going to be finally solved and I'm going to have to never go to the doctor again. So it's this wishing of very specific outcomes. So what optimism is, here's an outcome I want, here's an outcome that I think is good, and now I think I'm going to get that, right? Hope has no picture at the beginning of I don't want to know, except no, hope is I do expect to get good. It's very undefined, not something we like, right? Do you like that? Do you like the undefined? But with the invitation to a gift, God is saying, I'm giving you a taste of hope. I have a gift for you, and I'm not going to tell you what it looks like at the end. The gift is coming through the process. The gift is actually to be with me in the process. Here's a quote from N.T. Wright. Hope, he says, hope is a mode of knowing, a mode within which new things are possible. Options are not shut down, and new creation can happen. So it's this, hope is very big and broad and very much a this type of thing, rather than this grasping on. So, that is the grace of completion, an invitation to shalom, wholeness. The grace of cooperation, which is exactly what they had to do there. So we go to 6, and this is kind of the grace of cooperation is really seen in that first section of Hebrews 6, as well as in toward the end of that last thing. So I'll read 11 and 12, but it backed up with what we talked about last week. So 11, and we desire that each one of you show the same diligence or eagerness so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end, that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. So the grace of cooperation, I receive his restoration as grace, as a gift, not as a transaction. His initial work of grace on the cross, which opened up the veil, it reestablished me with the source of life, with my connection. It reestablishes me with where my wholeness comes from. And then I also receive his ongoing work of grace. And I think this is where we're already in our little quagmire of, oh, you mean there's not just the grace of the cross? Well, if there was just the grace of the cross, then we don't need the resurrection. But resurrection is the grace of life, of ongoing life. So grace isn't just to get to heaven, which is how we've done it. When we stop at the cross, then it's just a solution. But there's resurrection about living the new life and that it's imparted to us. Am I going to receive that as grace as well? And that's really what we talked about last week, is this grace of resurrection, of new life in us. It, what happens in this process is it wants to build our eyesight of seeing the new life in us. See, since we just want a solution, we just say, oh yeah, I believe Jesus died for my sins, I'm going to heaven. So I'm just going to get the solution, but I don't really want to go through the process, so I'm not even going to be looking for the grace to build up me seeing that my restoration is beginning and beginning and it's working in me, and that his presence is here right now and that eternity is here right now. Those are all very foreign to us when we decide that salvation is about going to heaven.
And the difference between living life in fear or drudgery and having the Eucharisteo,
right?
Like, I can see
right,
joy and
exactly,
thankfulness in everything.
Exactly.
So I think it's, I'm just thinking out loud, not so much, doesn't so much have to do with being saved, but like really enjoying,
yeah.
I have come to give you life.
Exactly.
Full
yes,
life,
yes, exactly. And to miss that is really sad. To miss that today, I get to enjoy eternity.
But even that's a process, because you start
yes.
out with
yep.
salvation.
Yep.
And that's by revelation.
Yep.
And
yep.
then you, as you grow, you learn
right.
more.
Right. But we have got to be really careful not to say that salvation is a solution. Because when we do, we close people off to the rest of the grace, which is the abundant life, living it now, receiving it now.
And I think historically, it's been, well, in my, you know, teenage and
mm-hmm.
20s, was that's how it was presented.
Right.
By and large.
Right.
Not always, but it was
but yes.
like,
yes.
you don't want to go to hell when you die.
Right.
It wasn't
right.
like, don't you want everything that God has to offer you in life right here and now
right.
and living in
right.
joy and not fear? It was
right.
presented
yes.
as... You don't
well,
want to go to hell when you die.
Also, I mean, it's sort of a solution to our disconnect with God.
Right.
Isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
So
broken covenant? I mean, it restores
it,
covenant.
It does.
So
it definitely restores
yeah.
covenant, but it does more than just reconnect. It gives us the whole life. So in a process, you may get some solutions,
mm-hmm.
but you get more. You get the fullness.
Well,
a solution rarely gives you fullness. Okay. There you go.
With another
there
person.
You go.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was thinking, like, what you were saying, Robin, like, when you're reading in chapter 6 about, like, the diligence to the very end. So, like, you know, it does bring up these things of, like, so what's my part? So what's my part? So what's the action? You know, because he's saying, like, you know, all these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look back and you realize, wait, the only action in there was drinking in the rain.
Yeah.
That was falling on the crop.
Yep.
So, and the rain
yep.
isn't a one-time thing.
And drinking in
you know
means
I mean?
Receiving it.
Right.
Yep.
So it's like the constant receiving
yep.
of all the rain that comes,
yep.
not like the one rain
yep.
fall.
Yep.
And you
whatever.
Can't do anything to make the rain fall.
Right. Exactly.
So
exactly.
It's just interesting how
yes.
I read diligence that constantly, like I
yes.
instantly think work, and then I look
yep.
back and I'm like, oh, it's receiving the
yes.
rain.
And so let's go to that point, because that word diligence there actually means eagerness. Be eager to receive it. And it says, be diligent so that, be eager. Be ready, be open, so that you realize the full assurance of hope. Be eager to allow the process to produce a sure hope. So we've had a taste of hope, and now this eagerness to receive the grace is going to develop in you, through a process, this sure hope. This is a really interesting word here. Because the full, I'm trying to think of where the word is. So the hope there is that full assurance actually means a full certitude. Interesting, because we go, oh good, I can be sure that I'm going to get this. But the word actually means not that you have full certitude to know what God is doing, but that you are fully sure that God is doing good. That's a huge difference. I know exactly what God is doing here. This is what he's doing here so he can do this for me. That's not the hope here. The hope is, I absolutely know God is doing good. Do you see the difference?
But that's a process too.
It's a process, and it is
complete. As you're being deconstructed, that's what you learn. And you don't
yes.
know any better
right.
until that happens.
Exactly. In other words, basically what Carol's saying is, you cannot get this by information. I can tell you this,
yeah.
but unless you submit to the process, you are never going to know this. But it is that knowledge, that certitude that God is doing good, that is hope. It's not, I know God is doing this, and I'm going to end up with this.
Mm-hmm. You know what's funny is the, like the single thing, like in Christian circles, there's almost the most pressure, right? To feel like singleness is a problem, right? I mean, there's the most pressure like you're supposed to be married,
yeah,
than outside of it. And I wonder if it's related to the fact that like the whole way we've been viewing the whole thing is that we have a problem. Do you know what I mean? Like, instead of, do you know what I mean? Like, well, of course you have a problem being single because you have a problem with your relationship with God. You have a problem that you're separated from Him. You have a problem, like, it's not viewed as, like, intimacy is the goal and being with Him and enjoying Him and being whole. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't know. I just, like, when, it just, I don't know.
Yeah. So, even this little grasp of truth is, again, a process. And you cannot get it unless you submit to the process. You let God give you the experiences, which is what He did with Abraham. So we go in this passage, and He starts talking about Abraham. And really, when you begin to read these passages, you need to start asking yourself questions. Why is He mentioning Abraham here? Why here? Why in this sureness? Because what He's pointing out to you is, Abraham went through a process, right? Yeah, Abraham, when God called him first in Ur, Abraham said, God said, come with me. Just go, follow me. I'm not going to tell you where, just go. And Abraham said, oh, sure. But in that, He said, go, leave your family and go. And Abraham said, sure, I'll go, but I'm going to take some of my family. And then he took his family, so he had to wait a little longer till his father dies. And then God calls him again. Okay, I'll go. And take your wife and go to this place. And he goes, oh, good, I'll do that. This is my sister. I don't want you to hurt me. And what you see with Abraham is he trusts a little bit, and he hopes that God is going to give him this land, and yet God wants to give him something bigger, this promise of inheritance, descendants. And what we see through Abraham's life is this process of learning what hope really is, of giving up what he thought the picture was and letting God paint the picture for him. Does that make sense?
Well, that required him to believe that God was good.
It required him to believe God was good, and it only took a little bit, because God again was giving him that grace, just a little bit, and I'm going to give you experiences that will show you a little bit more and a little bit more. And really, your activity in this is to just keep saying, yes, okay, I'll keep going through this process. Yep, 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 I'll do that, I'll do that. Which is the same thing in here. At any one of these times, and I often wonder, did anyone just bail? Just say, no way, this is too hard. I'm not doing it.
Well, and I think about the times in my life where I've, like, lost hope, or just been way too tired to trust again, to trust life, to trust. It's because my expectation of what was supposed to come didn't. And so it almost, you end up with this inability to trust anything because. But only because of your expectation.
Right, exactly. So understanding then that the deconstruction that begins to happen in our life is really essential for us to be able to be living in grace. Because it's our picture that keeps us away from the full union.
It's so easy to justify an expectation.
Yes.
You know, because our expectations, I imagine the expectations you're talking about, they're not like freakishly selfish. They're anybody would say, you should expect to be able to XYZ.
Right. Right.
And yet the expectation of our total expectation being on God is so contrary to the way I think.
Yes.
I really do have certain pictures of better and best, or good and bad.
Right,
Well, I expect to be able to live in a house.
Right.
Or reasonable.
Yeah. Right. Reasonable. Or what we would also term as fair.
Fair, yeah.
And as soon as you hear that word, what do you know? It's a transaction.
Well,
if it's fair, it's equitable. And it means I got this, I do this.
I think that's what's jarring about either traveling or like moving outside of your where you live, because the standard that you based everything on, you realize that it's not, you know,
yep.
your reasonable expectations aren't really reasonable.
Right. Exactly.
And again, you can't even teach it until you're like
right.
in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So it's, even that
yeah.
is designed by
yep.
God.
Yep.
So.
So it's actually a very freeing thing when you begin to think about it. And we're so afraid of it. And really what the Hebrew writer is trying to do is quell their fears about living in grace. That's really what he's trying to do. The next section that he talks about really talks about this too. And I think we'll be surprised when we see what he says. He says in 12, don't be sluggish. And the word sluggish there, of course, we think of physically lazy, I don't want to do anything. But the word actually means to be unfit for mental or spiritual activity. In other words, it means you have an unwillingness to have your mind or your spirit exercised or challenged. That's really hitting home, right? Because didn't we talk about before, wasn't one of our questions a couple weeks ago, how do you deal with people who have a different perspective? Mm-hmm. And almost to a person, it was like, well, I avoid them, or I try to change the subject. I don't want my perspective challenged,
right?
Right? Mm-hmm. I don't want my thinking challenged. I want perspective challenged. Because, hey, I know what's right.
That's right?
Right? Mm-hmm. And then we go, yeah, but Jesus says you don't. Mm-hmm. Jesus says, I have the right perspective. Are you willing to listen to me? It's going to sound really different than your perspective. That's what he's saying here is, don't be sluggish. Don't be unwilling to have your mind and your spirit exercised and challenged. And exercise does not mean I get on the bike and I do the exact same exercise day after day after day. Because in 2 weeks, that's not exercise anymore. Right? So if you are always thinking the same way, and the same thing, you are not letting your mind and spirit be exercised.
Wait, okay, the definition again of what?
The definition of sluggish is to be unfit.
Oh,
it's yeah, it's there. Sorry. To be unfit for mental or spiritual activity.
Oh, okay. And here are my lexicon. It says one who apprehends.
Ah, that's good. One who apprehends. I don't. What happens? We begin to build walls, right? Mm-hmm. Nope. I already know what's right. I already have the right perspective. I don't need it changed. Mm-hmm. Which as soon as you say that, you realize, oh, Scripture says, make sure to test everything.
I heard a definition of contemplation or prayer the other day that was like you walk away with thinking about something in a different, in a new way.
Yeah.
So you don't just think about something
right.
in the same way you've always thought about it
yes.
for like a cycle.
Right. Which is really what a conversation is with somebody, right? A good, one of the best conversations. Something that pricks you, that,
right.
oh, I never thought. Sherilyn came in this morning and right away we started getting into the Tree of Life. So she watched and she goes, oh, I saw this. And I thought, wow, I never thought, oh, I never saw that. That is stimulating. That is life. There's, oh, yeah, I get to see it more and more. That's a conversation. But that is what prayer is. The stimulation of God trying to show you, I got another perspective for
but
you.
But even the things that you're sharing, we have to test too.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
I mean, I understand we're to be open to different perspectives, but in the end, we will be required to test everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because not everyone's perspective is in line
nope.
with
nope.
God.
But
so,
not everyone's perspective who is different than yours is wrong.
No.
In
but
fact,
we have to test it.
This is here's what he's getting at. You're not the standard. I don't care what you believe. You're still not the standard.
And nor is anyone else.
And nor is anyone else.
Right,
exactly. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And
good.
I was like, I wonder what,
You know what? And that's exactly good. The pastor that I grew up with, in fact, I just wrote him a note because his wife died. And I said, one of the things I learned from you, sitting under you as a 10-year-old without family, he said from the pulpit every day, do not believe what I tell you. Look it up for yourself.
Yeah.
This is what he's saying is, are you allowing God to teach you? Mm-hmm. Or are you saying, no, I know what's right. Are you the standard? Or is God the standard? Mm-hmm. So yes, it is checking. It is not, it doesn't say assimilate everything. Right. It says test. It says be open to listen to perspectives. And here's the thing. So you might have somebody who has a completely different perspective. Maybe they don't even believe that Christ was God. Does it mean that something in their perspective isn't going to give you a truth? Does it mean that they can't have some truth? Mm-hmm. Because this is what we do. Oh, you don't believe this? I'm not listening to anything you have.
Mm-hmm. About anything.
About anything.
Yeah, spiritual or not.
Well, that doesn't mean that you don't honor the person.
It also doesn't mean you don't listen to them.
Well, I think you can listen, but you can also disagree if it doesn't line up.
You right? can. You can. What I'm saying is, we're very black and white.
And sometimes we're quick to say.
And we're very quick to say,
yeah.
Oh, you just said that? Forget it. Anything you say is wrong.
And I like when the first day that I was hearing you said, Jesus is everywhere.
Yes.
He's even in that person.
Yes.
And that's really stuck with me. Because there's some people who I struggle with.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep looking because he's there.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And you know, the people of Jesus' day in the temple said, look, you do not talk to Samaritans. And what does Jesus do? He goes and talks with a Samaritan. He doesn't say, okay, I'm not going to talk to a Samaritan. In fact, he talked to everybody that he wasn't supposed to talk to.
Roman soldiers.
He ate and drank with all the tax collectors and sinners. So I think this is a wall, and I think this is a wall that's hard for all of us to be broken down. I think it's a hard wall for us to all be deconstructed of, me included, especially me. But the willingness to trust that God knows what he's doing by bringing certain people into your life, certain perspectives into your life, the willingness to say, I trust you, God, that you're bringing good out of this. I trust you also to give me discernment. I'm not always going to discern right, but I trust that you're not going to go, oh, you didn't discern right on that one. Bye. Do you understand what I'm trying to show you about grace? Is that there's a lot of open hand with grace. And we do want to close it in.
Well, I think we guide judgment with discernment, right? We'll say, we're just big discerning. But really, we're judging the person and saying, you have nothing for me.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean when she said Jesus is everywhere?
Like when she was like that. Apple product. Like,
mm-hmm.
Oh,
right.
You know, like, is that God's hand in there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, revealing
mm-hmm.
himself.
So you said Jesus isn't everything. What did you say? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what you're
saying.
Well,
the issue is, are people, I think the difference is, are people submitting to his lordship? I think
right.
that's what you
right.
see should
right.
look different in someone. Not like, the fact is, God created everything, so mm-hmm. he is. You know what I mean? He can act and reflect and everything.
Right.
And we
but like,
all
is a person
right.
is a person like submitting to his lordship or not?
Right.
You know what I mean?
We're not talking pantheism. We're not talking that you're God and I'm God.
Yeah.
We're talking about the fact that eternity is here and he's showing his presence everywhere. And it doesn't have to be through a born again evangelical Christian.
Okay.
And that. And I'll tell you why that irritates me so much is because that's where I always lived.
Even bad people can do good things.
Mm-hmm. And even bad people can reflect who Jesus is.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we talk about that,
we
are. Oh, right, exactly,
you know,
exactly.
Like,
me.
Yeah.
We're all bad people and we're all made in his image.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Like
yep.
that tension.
Yep.
Somehow
right.
we can grasp the fact that a tree can reflect the beauty of God.
Yes, yes.
We don't want to really admit that person who just really frustrates us with everything they say,
right,
that somehow we might need to recognize, but yet they're my relative. And,
yeah,
and
yes,
they're in my life.
Yes.
And what is God doing?
Yes.
And
yeah.
what can I learn?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, the other day I was talking with someone and she kind of we were talking about her kids and she's like, yeah, you know, I will not let my children, you know, play or sleep over at anybody's house who's not a Christian. And I was like, wow, a lot of people. And then I'm thinking, record of maybe seeing life in these situations, and they might not, you know, be able, like, I get that, like, if there's an unhealthy situation, don't necessarily throw your child into it. But I was like, I'm thinking of all the other ways this child can learn from other people that they're just never going to learn from, you know? And all the disappointments that may happen when they're in a Christian environment of broken people.
Yeah,
people.
And then what are they going to learn?
You know? But I mean,
yeah.
It was just an interesting,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Huh, wow, I don't know.
And then
know?
How is she judging?
Yeah, exactly.
right, exactly, yeah. I'm sorry, what was your criteria? Do I
yeah.
fit?
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
I have no problem with you.
That's pretty bad.
I guess I'm struggling with this because I'm just kind of struggling because we do have to have discernment.
Right.
And it's not so dogmatic that you can just go.
Right.
So it's the process of it.
Yeah,
right.
And
exactly.
You're leaning on God
exactly.
to tell you the truth because
right.
He is
yep.
the truth. And
yep.
it's not like I cut people off because they don't have the same beliefs as me either.
Right, right. And that's
but
definitely.
I don't always say, yeah, you know, I mean, I feel like we're to be the salt and light
mm-hmm.
for Him.
Mm-hmm.
Not me, for Him.
Right.
And I'm not always
right,
but I think we do have to move in discernment in these days.
For sure,
know.
For sure.
But
I think there was
on.
No possibility
what?
There
when
for like,
I want
God going to bring me someone.
I think it's being open to listening to different perspectives.
Yeah.
It's that the openness, and I'm not telling you where that leads to. I'm
no,
saying
right.
that you can't. And the issue underneath is humility.
Yeah.
I mean that's the issue.
Like when after Ron died, you know, it was kind of cool to watch God use different people,
mm-hmm.
not believers,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
to be a part of our lives,
yep.
to instill or.
Right.
You know, so
right.
it's like that was a cool learning process
right. right
there because this is all his anyway.
Right.
And he's gonna use
right.
whatever,
yes.
whatever.
Yeah.
For the purpose.
Well
yeah.
the
so,
picture
yeah.
of the rain, right, in the Hebrews.
Right.
Like, the rain just doesn't fall on
yeah.
right.
Right.
person and
right.
person.
Right.
You know
uh-huh.
what I mean? The rain is falling
yep.
everywhere.
Yep.
Exactly.
Well
I think
the idea of having a boundary, you know, if I have a husband who's beating me,
mm-hmm.
there's no doubt
mm-hmm.
that there is a
right.
boundary,
right.
but I think the idea that challenges me the most is as a in the thinking I've been brought up with, I tend to have a whole lot more boundaries than I need to have.
Yes.
And
yes.
not being open to doing what God primarily tells us to do, and that's love one another.
Right.
And
yes.
He doesn't say love the people you like.
Right. Right.
right.
In fact, He condemns that.
Right. And so that's the challenge I'm hearing whenever it's like, open yourself up to different way of thinking. And God, if God is challenging me with a different viewpoint and I just shut that door, I'm missing what He might be trying to do to me.
Yep.
And
yep.
it doesn't, I don't think it means we shouldn't be discerning or have boundaries at
right.
times.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
yeah.
that's different.
I think it's there's discerning, but there aren't rules, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
if you approach the thing and you're like
right.
discerning about it,
right?
You know
yeah.
what
well,
I mean?
Right.
Person.
Right.
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 Oh, yeah.
Can we go on? Because we have a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have a lot, but as always.
Yeah.
But we're almost at the end of the page.
Yeah. we also it says are to follow others. Through faith and patience. And I think we've talked a lot about this before in other places, but understanding that the promise, the gift of life that He gave us, and this is the definition of that word promise there, a legally binding gift that is not acquired by negotiation. Let that sit with you for a minute. Do I understand that the promises God has given me, He has legally bound Himself to give me, and they were never acquired by negotiation. In other words, they're not a transaction.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting them because you did right, or thought right,
mm.
or believed right. You're getting them because they're a gift. What Not to Wear starts out, and they just give them $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
and they're offering it to them, not because, and it wasn't even because they dressed wrong. It's just a gift. It's just a gift. And it is legally binding to God. But also letting, this is last week, letting the theory of grace, we're really good about saying we're saved by grace. We're not really good about living by grace. Letting the theory of grace move to flesh. In other words, my belief that God is gifting me with restoration is seen in my attitude and actions toward all the circumstances that God brings me, as well as God himself. So let me just break that down a little bit. In other words, I believe that I am saved by grace. I believe that grace, that he's giving me grace all the time. So when I have a hard circumstance, if my belief is really faith, biblical faith says that you see it actually in my behavior. You see what I believe. In other words, word is flesh, if it's true. So in my behavior, when I have a bad thing happens, it does not mean I'm happy about it. It doesn't mean that my emotions aren't charged. It does mean, okay, not going to fight this. This is from God. He is here. I don't see him. I don't see good out of it, but I know it is good. That's flesh to your belief of grace. Okay? But also it says not just faith, but it says patience. And here's one of the most unusual places in the scripture that it talks about patience. Because we talk about patience in circumstances. That's not what this word is. And we talk about patience with other people. This is patience with God. That in the midst of hard grace, I'm patient with God. I can look at God and not say, you are not good. I can say, okay, God, you're good. I can be really honest. I don't see the good, but I know you are good, and I'm just going to watch and wait. This is part of the eagerness of submitting yourself to grace. So we have the grace of completion. We have the grace of cooperation. And then we have the grace of confidence. And that is that 360 mirror. So I'm invited here, this is an invitation, to let his word dispel any contradiction. Let me break that down where we're getting that from. So 13 through 16. For when God made the promise to Abraham, since he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply you. And thus, having patiently waited, he obtained the promises. In the same way, God desiring... Oh, for men swear by one greater than themselves, and with them an oath given as confirmation is the end of every dispute. Okay, so first of all, let's talk about the blessing he gave there. The words that are there are really interesting because they basically say it three times. Basically, in the Greek, it would say, in my continual blessing of you, I will absolutely bless you one point at a time, one point at a time, one point at a time. So what he's saying is, I'm always blessing, and in my continual blessing, I'm blessing you specifically today. I'm blessing you specifically this instance, this instant. And the word blessing, so that's the voice and the, I'm forgetting my Greek terms. It's the underneath of the verb, but the verb itself doesn't, we think about bless is, you know, good. It's bless means that I will act for your good and not necessarily for what you want. That's all in that. And the word is, you'll recognize this word, is eulogize. Mm-hmm. I will act for your good. So he says, God says to Abraham, and remember the blessing is for all of us who are in Abraham, I will surely, as I am blessing you, as I'm acting for your good always, I will specifically act for good in this point, and in this point, and in this point, and in this point. It's this present tense continual while also this aorist punctiliar, I'm doing here, I'm doing here, I'm doing here. Do you understand this overall, like I'm always blessing, but I'm specifically always blessing in each and every circumstance. I'm acting for your good. So it covers everything. I'm acting for your good. It's a promise here. And Abraham's experience shows this as true. What looked like bad was good. Every step for Abraham, he began to understand that more and more and more, so that when we get to the point of the what we call the sacrifice of Isaac, Abraham is able to do it. Now, we've talked about the sacrifice of Abraham a million times, so I'm not going to go through that. But what he knew, without a doubt, is God's good, and he's doing something good with this. I don't get it, and we know later on when we go in chapter 11, what Abraham was kind of thinking was, God said he's going to bring life out of Isaac, and now he's asking me to kill him. But I know that God could resurrect Isaac, so I know God's going to do good. I don't know how he's going to do that. I don't know how it's going to work, but I don't need to know.
Well, Jill, the Greek word there is makrothumia.
Yep.
Which the word macro means like
yes.
Big picture.
Yep. Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
exactly.
I don't know how that helped me. Like, oh, it's the big picture. Kind
right.
Of
exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Like, wait on the big picture.
Right. So I don't know the specifics, which is what we talked about at the very beginning. I don't know the specifics, and hope is not knowing the specifics. Hope is knowing that the big picture is God's good.
That's when it goes to the
grace.
Mountain.
Yeah.
And he says to the
yep.
two guys, it's like, we're going to be back.
Right, we're going to be back. Yep, we're going to worship, and we're going to be back.
Yeah.
No problem.
He didn't say, I'm going to be back.
I know the big picture is God is doing good. Mm-hmm. I don't know the small picture, but this is where hope is. This place of waiting, knowing God is good, and not understanding the specifics
and
of God's goodness.
The difference, too, is the circumstance. Because I think, at least for me, I always think, if you're saying, I don't see the good, but it will be good, you're talking about the circumstance. But maybe circumstances can be bad, period.
Right. Right.
And that's not the thing that will eventually...
Right.
Okay, and so where we're going here, and we talked about this before, is we have to allow God to define good for us.
Mm-hmm.
And he defines good as being in complete union with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what good is.
Mm-hmm.
We think good is comfort.
Yep.
God says, no, you are made to be in complete union with me, wholeness, that's good. And so the circumstances that are bad and remain bad are still good because it draws us to a unity with him. Does that make sense?
Yeah. He doesn't necessarily promise, okay, so draw near to me, then I'll make the circumstance.
Right, exactly.
Although
exactly.
I even think I can tend to get to the point where I'm drawing near, and then I have the silly expectation that my circumstance will actually get better.
Yes, exactly. And
I continue to
right,
want to train back.
Right.
Yeah,
well, yeah, I drew near to you. I'm relying on you, so do good. And he's saying, I am doing good. You're now closer to me.
But that would be like the micro.
Yes.
Patient.
Yes.
You know
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
The union is like complete wrapped around. It's not a demarcation between
right.
you and
him. Right.
And almost with delayed prayer, circumstances changing to our picture. Almost stops the process.
Yes,
right away.
Exactly.
Like right away.
Exactly.
So it's almost like
yes.
in a delayed prayer.
Yes.
It keeps you in that place of dependence.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. So do you begin to see that living in grace is, first of all, a lot different than we assume, and it does take a lot of just allowing God to be molding you little by little, changing the way you think about everything.
Back to what we were talking about earlier, having grace for people's perspectives that to us seem odd, and maybe they're not biblical, but having grace for those perspectives is a lot more inviting to those people to be
open to seeing a biblical perspective rather than us immediately putting up a wall or telling them, yeah, but what you think isn't biblical, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think that's helpful. That's helpful. So what that helps us do is we're able to do just as Abraham did, and that is, it tells us here, that he patiently waited, and it's in the moment. And here's where we forget. We go back again to solution. I want to look forward to what's going to happen at the end. And God says, no, I want you to be here, right now with me here, because it's here, like Carol said, it's here that the union begins. The union happens. It's not later. It's not a solution. It is in here is where the union is coming. Do you understand that? It's this moment. So grace is also about living right now here rather than I just want to get there. And my whole thoughts are there. Exactly. And the whole point is that you're growing in union with him here. If I all want to be there, I don't grow. It's not a growth thing. It's just I have a picture. I have what I wanted. But God doesn't have what he wants. And really, in the long run, we don't, because there's no union with that, with a solution. His oath. Now, here's an interesting thing. So it says that he gives us an oath. He said, I've promised to bless you, and I'm going to give you an oath. And the oath here is this, first of all, it's the second witness. So legally, during this time, you could not convict anybody or you could not release anybody with just one witness. It had to be two. So God gives himself as witness twice, his promise and his oath. And he says that the oath, here's an interesting thing. This is what an oath of a man does, and so with God. An oath is in order that, let me go back here. 16, for men swear by one greater than themselves, and with them an oath. And an oath is given as confirmation as an end of every dispute. Go back to the word dispute. It actually means contradiction. An oath says the contradiction isn't true. So, what's our contradiction? We say, this is a bad circumstance. And God's oath says, no, it's not. I'm promising you it's not. Here's an end to that contradiction. There is not good and bad. All of it, macroly looking, it's good. I'm doing good for you. Bad can be good and good can be good. I hope I'm not confusing you here, but what he's saying is you only see the dark side of it, but underneath there's beauty. The 360 mirror, where they only, you know, they say, you shouldn't be wearing this. It hides this and this and this. Underneath here, you're a beautiful woman. So my critique of you, these hosts say, looks, it sounds bad. It sounds like an awful thing, but I'm deconstructing to show you the good. And when God deconstructs us, he never leaves us alone. He gives us his oath. No, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, this is good. This is good. Yeah, I know. It's a bad circumstance, but it's good. This is all life. And maybe I should use that word better. This bad circumstance, it's life. Because it's bringing you wholeness, drawing closer to me, more in union with me. This is the goal here. So that oath that brings an end to every dispute, it ends the contradiction. Where you see darkness, God says there's light underneath that. There is. It's this revelation of how deeply connected being with him is life. He's trying to give you more and more a picture of what is really good, what is really life. And that's that connection with him, that union and wholeness. If I'm able to do this, to understand that his blessing is to act for my good, that in all things He's acting for my good. I won't then spend my energy trying to get out of my current grace. Which is, if it's a hard grace, we're trying to get out of it, right? But if I say, this is grace, God has promised me that although it looks bad, it's life. I'm not going to try to get out of it. I'm going to allow the process of it to change my thinking, to transform me into someone who has more union, more closeness with God than if I hadn't had this. In patient waiting, as Abraham did, as we are asked to, again, that patience with God, our hope then is purified. Because hope actually deprives us of everything that isn't God. Where's that quote from?
I think it's from...
Oh, from Merton. Okay. Hope deprives us of everything that is not God, so that, and this is my comment on it, that my drawing near to God is done in complete freedom, is not done in transaction. Like Julie said, I'm drawing close to you, so don't I get the answer to my prayer? But hope deprives us, brings us to the place where there's nothing but God. And so I see that union with God is actually the good thing. It's not the thing I was wanting. It's the union with God. So that now my drawing near is done in freedom, not with an emotional transaction going on in my head. Like, okay, God, I'm going to draw near you. And really going. And we do this. We do this all the time. We say in our head, God, I want to draw near to you. I know this hard circumstance is making me draw near. I want to draw near. And in the back we go, because if I draw near, the circumstance goes away and everything's good. Yes? Am I the only one who does that? The hope that is being built in us in allowing the process of grace is realizing and understanding it's the union with God that's the good thing. And it's deconstructing our picture of what's good. So that my picture of what's good is being refined and whittled down to, no, that's not good. Health, perfect health is not good. Perfect relationship is not good. It's union with me that's good. And with union with me, then we begin to experience and understand life in its fullness. It got really quiet here, like, I don't want to hear that.
I'm kind of thinking about, you know, a friend has liver cancer.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing they said is, okay, this is a problem, we need to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get chemo going right away, because mm-hmm. their whole liver has laceration.
Mm-hmm.
But is that, I mean, so that, I know you're not saying, well, don't seek medical treatment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's funny because that's something, that's a tension I live with a lot. It's not cancer, obviously, but as far as like how do I keep being responsible and pursuing health mm-hmm. even though it's not showing up, or even though like there's also truth to the fact that there's good in the circumstance, how do I keep also pursuing, you know,
right,
the resolution of it?
And
I think there's a tension in that. Like, my hope is not in my health being better, even though I'm pursuing it. My hope is in God. Mm-hmm.
And in the process
right.
of getting better,
right.
leaning on the Lord.
Even
right.
if I don't get better.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because, with your friend, I mean, this is kind of what Betty and I would talk through.
Mm-hmm. And
she knew that her end was death.
Yeah.
So her hope wasn't that she would live. Her hope was, Where is God's closeness to me? And it became more and more. And even with someone who absolutely is close to the Lord, the drawing near can become closer and closer and closer. It didn't mean, I mean, that's what we did every week. We went to chemo. You know, we did seek out those. But it wasn't being sought out as the end of all my problems, as the, this is what I'm living for. Does that make sense? There is going to be tension in grace. There's going to be, I got to hold these things that seem opposite. And this is our problem with our black and white thinking. Mm-hmm. I can't have both. I have to have one or the other. And that's actually not how grace works, nor is it how eternal life works. There is this, I'm willing to let go of having one or the other. I can live with both. Now, I don't even want to get into that because that becomes a little bit more heady. But there is going to be tension in grace. It's not a solution. It's not a, oh, got it, I'm good, don't have to rely anymore.
Well, I also don't think it means that we become inactive in this world.
Well, and I do want to say that. Right.
Anything.
Exactly.
Or even are free to pursue goodness or the healing of treatment or
right.
healing of things that really aren't right.
Right.
God created
right.
our brain.
Yes.
He created
yes.
knowledge
yes.
and growth.
Yes, exactly. Those are gifts as well. In fact, the last couple things that I've written in my gratitude journal are some of the things, some of the medical things that we have found just in this week is thank you for, somebody who knows how to do a blood test this way and thank you for this. Those are wonderful and great things.
Right.
But it gets down to a more nitty-gritty level, a cellular level of where is my hope? Is my hope that my picture turns out right?
Mm-hmm.
Or is my hope that God will be in union with me, that I will be in union with God, rather. Let me quickly go through the last one, because this is a short lesson. Oh, good thing we didn't watch. So the last one is grace of courage, which to me is like just explodes this whole passage open. It's so beautiful. And this is the invitation to vulnerability. Because it says there that he interposed with an oath, verse 18, in order that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we may have strong encouragement, we who have fled for refuge in laying hold of the hope set before us. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast and one which enters within the veil. He first says the reason he gave us an oath was to give us courage. And we often think encouragement and courage are two separate things. No, courage. And here's an old definition of courage. This is an old, old definition of courage. It comes from the word cur, which is heart. So it talks about this whole heart. The definition is to be able to tell your story of who you are with a whole heart. To be able to tell the story of who you are with a whole heart. In other words, exactly what Adam and Eve did not do once they chose something else. Because what did they do? They tried to hide who they were rather than say, I sat this morning praying, thinking, wow, Adam and Eve had the invitation and opportunity to say, I'm naked, I did it. I'm sorry, I did it. But they didn't. They chose to hide and say, No, I'm good, right? We talked about that, using God's gifts to hide behind things. But courage, God says, I'm giving you an oath so that you have courage to be able to be naked, to be able to be vulnerable and say, this is who I am. I am completely imperfect, and I'm completely disconnected with you, and I need this connection with you. The picture here, as he talks about, is for those who flee for refuge. And the picture is the cities of refuge. So we didn't get to talk about this in Leviticus, but it comes up in Numbers and Deuteronomy. When God gave the land and portioned out the land, he also said, I want you to set up first three and then three more cities of refuge within the land. And cities of refuge were to be, they had to be a certain distance away from everything. So in other words, they had to be close enough that a person could run to it within a day. And the cities of refuge were for anybody who accidentally, without intention, killed someone, that they could run to that city of refuge. And what they needed to do at the city of refuge is they would run to it. And first of all, the roads to the city of refuge had to be the best roads there were, and they had to be maintained by the Levites, which is a whole lesson in itself. But when the person, the murderer, but that's not a good term, came to the city of refuge, the first thing he had to do, knock on the gate of the city elders had to come out, and he had to say to them, I just killed someone. Will you let me dwell here? And they brought them in and gave them a home to dwell in this city of refuge. And that person was allowed to dwell in that city of refuge for their entire life or until the high priest died. So they stayed there forever. Now, they were because they went there, they were no longer under a death sentence from the Avenger. So I don't want to go into this too much, but the if someone would kill someone, a relative had the right to avenge the death and kill that person. But if you ran to the city of refuge and you dwelt there, the Avenger could not get you. You basically were now, life sentence is taken. You are now able to live a full entire life, and you were given a home to live in the city of refuge. If you left the city of refuge, the Avenger could come and kill you.
What about your family? Did you have to leave your family, or did they come with you?
You know, that's not very clear. My guess is that they could have come with you, but maybe not. Mm-hmm. Most of the times, you only see a single person running there. Which, again, is another whole lesson. So, the city of refuge, this is what they are alluding to here, is you have this invitation to come to the city of refuge. And to come to that city of refuge, you have to be vulnerable and say, I'm naked. I killed someone. Would you let me live here forever? It's grace. You're basically saying, I'm a mess, I need grace. And here's the interesting thing is, the whole life that you live in that, everyone knows. You're somebody who needs grace. Oh, they needed grace, that's why they're here. This is a place, now he can live completely free. Everyone knows I murdered someone. Everyone knows I killed someone. I don't have to hide it. I don't have to pretend. I know, kill. But we'll talk about that in a minute.
Difference between murder and killing.
I can live completely free, naked, vulnerable. That's freedom. And that's what he's talking about. Now, the interesting thing, Pat brought up, yes, it was only someone who killed intentionally. But with Christ being the city of refuge, he says everybody can run to the city of refuge. And here, you come to the door and say, I'm naked. I need to live here. And what happens then, when someone comes to live completely naked, they have no problem then living grace, grace, grace. I'll receive grace and grace. It's obvious I need grace. I can't hide it. This is, remember that even when the high priest was dressed, he had to first start out naked. You know what I've done. You know I've led you into false worship. I can't be anything but receiving grace and grace. I know I need it, and I'm not going to pretend I don't. That's freedom, to be able to live in grace, not pretending I don't need it. And what happens then is that because as I live knowing I need grace, I just keep taking it. I just keep going, oh, grace. The ground that takes the rain in. Oh, grace. Oh, this home is grace. Oh, the fact that I live here, I can have a job, I can work, I can have a family here, is grace. I'm taking it, I'm taking it, I'm taking it. And what happens to a person that keeps on receiving grace?
They're grateful.
They have joy. They have rest. I don't have to worry about putting up walls, pretending I'm not who I am. I don't have to worry about being avenged or having the Avenger come after me. I can abide then in this hope. Good is happening to me. Good is what it is all about. And what happens is it hooks me and it hooks that person into that place of grace. It's like this is where I find life. And so when it talks about the anchor, it's funny because I've heard so many sermons on this, and they always talk about Think about the anchor of a steamship. It has nothing to do with size. It has everything to do with shape. And the shape is the hook that actually hooks into and becomes almost a part of the solid foundation. And that's what it's saying is, this is the hook. Living in grace is the hook that hooks me into Christ, that hooks me into the place of life. It's that living vulnerably, completely in grace. I know that that strengthens my the source of connected to the source of life. And I know it doesn't fail. In other words, and that's what that word means, sure. It doesn't fail. It doesn't bring me back, once this incident is over of grace, this hard grace, it doesn't bring me back to where I was at the beginning. It actually continues the grace and changes me from the inside and transforms me.
It transforms if you remember where you live, right? Essentially.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you could get there
yeah.
and you could forget you're
right.
in the city of refuge.
Well, and that's why he says, if you leave the city of refuge.
Right. But even if you're in the city of refuge and you forget, that's what it is. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, and does that not remind you of a verse in Deuteronomy that he says, now God says to the Israelites, now let me tell you, once you get into the land, and you prosper, and you do well,
yeah.
and you begin to think that it is by your hands that you have all
yeah.
this,
yeah.
woe to you!
Right.
Your father was a wandering Aramaean, which is what they had to say every time they went to the temple. My father was a wandering Aramaean.
Mm-hmm. Like, you can't forget.
I cannot forget that I ran to the city of grace because I needed it.
And that I
can't live without grace. Mm-hmm. So it's this whole beautiful picture, and it's why, again, it continues to be processed, because he knows we're going to forget. Oh, you're forgetting. I need to give you life again. I need to give you life again over and over.
Therefore,
over
deconstruction.
Again. Therefore, deconstruction. Yep, over and over again. I like this quote by Richard Rohr that says, salvation is only secondarily assuring you of eternal life. It is first of all giving you that life now and saying, if now, then later also. And that, oh, I can't even read this. And that becomes deep and abiding certitude. If God would accept me now, when I am clearly unworthy, then why would he change his policy later? So then I begin to rest. I begin to enjoy. I begin to love life. Knowing I am that one who ran into the city of refuge, and I need to live by grace. It's what gives me life, is living by grace. Not my transactions. They don't give me life. It's grace that gives me life. And so the process of grace, the process of Jesus was the exact same. He entered the full hope because he himself went through the process. In fact, it says right in the chapter before, he learned obedience through the things he suffered, which was grace. And Jesus is a high priest forever. And here's that tension. He's finished his work, and then he continues his work in us, directing us, bringing us the process. If we fully submit to the process of grace, then my focus is on God's presence in my life, and I won't be comparing my life to others. If I'm learning a new step, if I'm learning how to ski, I am all about all the grace that I'm getting there, right? I'm learning the steps. I'm learning this. And I'm not going, oh, but she's doing much better. Why does she get an easier hill than I do? I'm not, because I'm so concerned about taking in, right? And if I'm living in the process, my understanding will be how much I need grace. And if my understanding is continually how much I need grace, then I have no problem with someone next to me needing grace too. And I'm easily going, oh, you need grace too. Yeah, so do I. Do you understand that this process of grace brings us this transformation, seeing other people, seeing our circumstances and other people's circumstances? I can rejoice with someone even when I'm going through hard circumstances. Because what they're going through is God doing good for them, and what I'm going through is God doing good for me. And I'm concerned about God's presence in my life, not comparing with what's going on with somebody else. Living in grace is such a deep necessary invitation for us to submit to, that without it, we lose the abundance. We only get this very surface type of life. And it's not what he's made us for. So, our short lesson, went over 10 minutes. I think, and here's what's happening with Hebrews. Hebrews takes us 4.5 chapters to say this is who Jesus is. He is the giver of grace. And then it stops, it pulls back and says, so how do we respond? And this is where we've been at these last 2 weeks. How do you respond? Are you willing to take the invitation to be in the process of grace? And then we're going to go back to, this is how Jesus gives grace. And then it's going to pull back. How do you respond? Are you responding to saying yes to the process of grace? So these are our little times of, wow, Jesus is giving grace. Am I receiving it as grace? So, Father, we thank you for the grace that we see and for the grace we don't see. We even thank you for the grace of not having to understand it all at once. That it is a process in our understanding and in our experience. And we are so grateful that you are patient with us, that you continue to give us day by day your blessing of giving us what is good for us, that we might become more and more whole, more united with you, more seeing, more living the abundance of living in eternity. In Jesus' name, amen. Next week, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably not going to answer all your Melchizedek questions. Okay, well. Have you read that before, Amy?
I've never read it.
Have you ever read any Buechner?
No, I don't
think. Oh. Yeah, take it. Yeah, you're welcome to take it. Yeah. Is it yours or mine? It's probably Liz's.
No, take it. All right, it's good.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
I'm sorry, I don't have any books like that. Yeah, like anything fiction. No, I know, it's so weird. I like really don't.
I'm the same.
I like try. I can't. Yeah, I know, I'm sorry.
I really like. I wish I was young.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay,
how
about biography?
Love biography.
Okay, that's historical fiction. Okay.
Which book are you talking about? Oh, The Hunger Games. Oh, yeah. That's right.
No,
that's funny.
What's that about?